Brett Hall became a reverend. He became a minister. And he's now our spiritual leader. And so right now, I want to introduce to you, speaking today, someone who not only has been bringing the music, is going to be bringing the message, Reverend Brett Hall. Thank you. I love you, Mr. Seth. Brett Hall became a reverend. It sounded like Brett Hall became a reverend. That didn't become that way there. So, and thank you, Spirit Juice, my Spirit Juice family. So grateful to my Spirit Juice family. We're on holy ground, right? We said we are. I saw you. I was there. So, grateful to Spirit Juice. I'm grateful to all of you. I'm really grateful to all of you. Now, I wasn't out here earlier to see the show of hands for how many people are here for the first time today. Would you mind raising your hands again? Well, hallelujah. I'm so glad you're here. The one thing that wasn't asked earlier is there anyone here today that has not been here in what you would consider to be quite a while, a long time? Well, check you out. Hallelujah. Can I get an amen? Amen. Hallelujah. Do any of you feel a little bit like the prodigal son? Or daughter? I'm just asking. I love the prodigal son. And today is Friendship Sunday, and it's about friends coming home, friends being together. And I always think of this annual celebration of friendship and sharing your spiritual home with others really as a kind of homecoming. I think we need to change the name of this day moving forward. It's kind of a friendship homecoming, isn't it? So I said, welcome home. Zoe asked me the other day what my talk title was. She needed to print the bulletins, and I said, oh my gosh, I don't know. I've got everything else done for the service. How about welcome home? Because that's really what it is. So welcome home. And clearly, I'm fond of music. And the opening lyrics of Home from The Wiz are, when I think of home, I think of a place where there's love overflowing. Sing it with me. Here's your note. When I think of home, I think of a place where there's love overflowing. We'll work on it together later. Anyway, I like to think that Unity of New York is a place where there's love overflowing. How about you?
Yes.
I can feel it. And much to his amazement and surprise, isn't that just what the prodigal son felt when he returned home? Love overflowing. Who's familiar with the prodigal son? It's a pretty popular story. Okay. Well, if you are familiar with it, I invite you to be in beginner's mind today and listen with fresh ears, because we're always hearing things in new ways. And for those of you who love reading the Bible, you'll find this in the book of Luke, chapter 15, verse 11 through 32. In the meantime, here's the story. The prodigal son is also known as the story of the lost son. There was once a man who had two sons. The younger said to his father, Father, I want right now what's coming to me. So the father divided the property between them. And it wasn't long before the younger son packed his bags and left for a distant country. There, undisciplined and dissipated, he wasted everything he had. After he had gone through all of his money, there was a bad famine all through that country, and he began to hurt. He signed on with a citizen there who assigned him to his fields to slop the pigs. He was so hungry he would have eaten the corn cobs and pods that the pigs ate. but no one would give him any. That brought him to his senses. He said, all those farmhands working for my father sit down to 3 meals a day, and here I am starving to death. I'm going back to my father. I'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against God, I've sinned before you. I don't deserve to be called your son. Please take me on as a hired hand. And he got up and began the journey home to his father. And when he was still a long way off, his father saw him. His heart pounding, he ran out, embraced him, and kissed him. And the son started his speech. Father, I've sinned before God. I've sinned against you. I don't deserve to be called your son ever. But the father was not listening. He was calling to all the servants, quick, bring a clean set of clothes and dress him. Put the family ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Then get a grain-fed heifer and roast it. We are going to have a feast. We're going to have a wonderful time. My son is here, given up for dead and now alive. Given up for lost and now found. And they began to have a wonderful time. Now all this time, the older son was out in the field. When the day's work was done, he came in. And as he approached the house, he heard the music, saw the dancing, and he called over to one of the house boys. He said, what's going on? And he told him, your brother came home. Your father has ordered a feast, barbecued beef, because he has him home safe and sound. And the older brother stalked off in an angry sulk, and he refused to join the party. His father came out and he tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't listen. The son said, look, how many years I've stayed here serving you, never giving you one moment of grief, but have you ever thrown a party for me and my friends? Then this son of yours who has thrown away all your money on whores shows up and you go all out with a feast, really? His father said, son, you don't understand. You're with me all the time. And anything that is mine is yours. But this is a wonderful time. And we have to celebrate. This brother of yours was dead, and now he's alive. He was lost, and now he's found. The end. Or the beginning. I want to summarize this a little bit differently for you. Once upon a time, there was a father with 2 sons. The older son was the good one, dutiful, righteous, or rather self-righteous, a little judgmental, or a lot judgmental. And the younger son, well, he was the wild one. He was restless, adventurous, and he was past ready to get out of this one-horse town he lived in. So he asked his dad if he could have his inheritance early. And the dad loved him, and he said yes. So without passing go, but definitely collecting way more than $200, the younger son took off. He went out to sow his wild oats. Sex, drugs, rock and roll. And who knows how long he was gone, probably years. And then he woke up one day, totally messed up, totally broke, needed money, needed a place to live. And he had no skills. All he knew how to do was spend money and have fun. So he had to get a job, and the only job he could get was slopping pigs. Literally living with and feeding pigs. But he still really didn't have any food. He would have eaten what they were eating, but they wouldn't even give him that. It belonged to the pigs, not him. And this was about as low as a nice Jewish boy could go. Remember, Jesus was also a nice Jewish boy, speaking to lots of other Jews, during that time. So they really thought, oh my God, that's below rock bottom. So it was at this point, being at rock bottom, that the young man came to himself, came to his senses, and he said, I'm going home. I'm going home. Whatever awaits me there can't possibly be any worse than this. Even the servants at home were treated well. They have a place to live, three meals a day. Maybe his dad would forgive him and take him back as a servant because he certainly was going to be dead to him as a son. So off he went on his journey home. And when he got close and he was still off in the distance over the hill, the father saw him and he ran to meet him. Now think about this, especially if you're a parent. Do we have any parents here today? Think about what it would feel like, or perhaps you've been through it, to lose a child. I watched my mom go through that. This man that loved his son so much had lost him. He didn't think he would ever see him again. He didn't know if he was dead or alive. But still he held out hope. He held out hope and he looked for him every single day, every day. And it had to have been years since he had seen him. And when he saw that son over the hill, he ran, he grabbed him, he kissed him, he started celebrating like crazy. He said, party. Oh my God, party, he's home. Get the best of everything, I thought he was dead. And the good brother, who was not quite as happy as the dad about this, because he never made a fuss over him, he was dutiful, he was obedient, we already know that. And the father reminded him that whatever I have is yours, and you have always had access to it. You have always had access to everything that is mine. And you still have access anytime you want it. But you didn't ask. I love you both unconditionally. I always have. I always will. Now get over yourself and let's celebrate. And that's pretty much how the story ends. And who knows how long that party went on. So, we're in unity. If we look at this story metaphysically, beyond the obvious, we know that these three characters are all aspects of us. The older brother represents the self-righteous part of us that can be holier than thou. I don't know if you can relate to that at all. And the younger son, well, let's listen to what he represents from author Robert Winterhalter. The moral downfall and reform of the younger son is only this parable's surface meaning. In a wider sense, this really sums up the history of the human race. Forgetting that God is part of the symbology of the story. Remember, a son does not normally inherit from his father's estate until the father is dead. The younger son took his journey into a far country, and this represents the human soul when it loses contact with the divine presence. It becomes engrossed in material things, appearances. The far country is not a place. It's a belief in external causes and manifold powers, and is foreign to the true understanding of life. In this far country, the younger son squandered his property in loose living, wasted his substance in riotous living. Outwardly, this implies lust, drunkenness, squandering money. Inwardly, the most important place, it means that when the soul loses its awareness of God as the one presence and the one power, it becomes prone to a riot of confusion. And in such a chaotic state, mental substance is depleted and the realization of one's spiritual power is lost. And when he had spent everything, a great famine arose in that country, and he began to be in want. Metaphysically, a belief in separation from our spiritual source is certain to create feelings of lack and limitation. And out of a deep sense of lack and sorrow and despair, hope reappears for the Son for a return to spiritual wholeness. While in this low estate, the prodigal remembered that he was his father's son. Nothing he did or failed to do could ever change this fact. And likewise, we are all eternal children of God. Whether we know it or not, whether we remember it or not, whether or not our thoughts and actions reflect our true nature, we are eternal children of God. Rising out of sorrow and emptiness of heart, the Son came to himself. He began to realize his true self, the indwelling Christ. He came home. He came home. Can anyone relate to this? Like the younger son, this story is our story about coming home to ourselves, coming to our senses, having a divine realization that no matter what we have ever done or experienced, we always, always, always have access to God without fail, access to all of our good. We sometimes leave and we go out to a far country, but it is impossible for God to leave because wherever we are, God is, right? Wherever we are, God is. Coming to ourselves is coming home. It's the way back to God, and we always have our inner GPS to guide us right back whenever we're ready. And here's something else that I find really interesting about this story. Now, we think of prodigal as being lost. Yes, the prodigal son. But the true definition of prodigal is spending money or resources freely and recklessly, wastefully extravagant. Prodigal means wastefully extravagant. And that's who the prodigal son was. He was reckless, he was wasteful, he was materialistic. He was having an experience, a journey that he had to go through to come back around to himself. Kind of like Dorothy in Oz. She had to go on that journey. So, what parts of you have you wasted recklessly and extravagantly in your own life? Parts of you, not stuff. I'm not talking about stuff. We've all been caught up in external, out there. We live on planet Earth. You know, that's a given. It's living on the planet. When I think about this, I can't even count the times I've been through this. And I definitely had the opportunity to come home to myself this year. Many of you know that. I don't want to dwell on it, but I didn't necessarily wander off into the world, but man, when things went all cattywampus in the past year, I was thrown off track. And very grateful that I had all my tools to get back on track. About a year ago, when I lost my mom, my sweet mom, it really sucked. And that just got the ball rolling. And I was chugging along last fall, moving forward. We were all doing our unity thing. And then Santa Claus brought me a cancer diagnosis for Christmas. I'm like, I do not have time for cancer. You gotta be kidding me. Oh, and there were plenty of financial challenges going on simultaneously through all of this. So it was a real recalibration of life. And a lot of times it felt like navigating a minefield. But I knew through all of that, I knew that I have everything I need to get through it. I'm a minister now. I've earned my stripes. I got all these tools in my big old toolbox. But you know what? There were times, there were plenty of moments where I didn't feel like I knew much of anything, no matter what I knew. Have you ever been there? Fun place, huh? You know, it's about those occasional bouts of spiritual amnesia that we get. Again, life on planet Earth. But you know, it was the cancer theme that really took me into that land of the unknown. A place that I had not been before, my foreign land. I really did not know what life was going to look like ahead of me. I knew I had choices to make, recovery. And even though this was certainly not the very first time in my life that a seismic shift had happened, and the trajectory of my life was literally changed from it, I still knew that I had solid ground to stand on. It's my unity foundation. I'm endlessly, infinitely, forever grateful to unity. And I feel like there have been so many times along the way that it has literally saved my life. And it's, you know, it's like the old adage, when you come to the fork in the road, take it. So I've come to many forks in the road on my journey, as we all have. So as I was laying around in February after my surgery, I found myself, I don't know if it was the purpose set or what, but I found myself thinking a lot about our Unity co-founder, the mother of Unity, Myrtle Fillmore, and how all of this began. All of this that brings us together right here, right now, today. For those of you that don't know the story of how Unity began, raise your hand if you have no idea how Unity began. Oh, good. Okay, here's the nutshell version. Back around 1890 or so, a woman named Myrtle Fillmore, a school teacher in the Midwest, prayed herself into wellness after receiving a diagnosis of tuberculosis. Now, there are two important things to know about tuberculosis at that time. One, it was pretty much believed to be a death sentence, and two, it was believed to be inherited. But what had happened was, after she received this diagnosis, Myrtle, accompanied by her husband Charles, attended a lecture on metaphysics in Kansas City by a metaphysician who traveled, his name was E.B. Weeks. And at this lecture, Myrtle Fillmore heard him say, "I am a child of God, therefore I do not inherit sickness." And that got her attention. Now, as lore has it, and the story goes, as it's passed down, Charles didn't even hear the man say that. But Myrtle did, and that was what was important. Because she figured, if this is true, and I'm willing to check it out and find out, if I'm a child of God and do not inherit sickness, that would have to include tuberculosis. And that means it's possible to be healed of it. So she began to pray, and pray a lot, and often, and committedly. And she used that affirmation, "I'm a child of God, therefore I do not inherit sickness." She committed to it. She prayed every day, seeing her body healed, whole, praying to every cell, every atom, every tissue. She spoke to it. She loved it. She asked her body to forgive her for calling it sick and calling it weak. And what happened was that this woman, who had been given months to live, told to get her affairs in order, was completely healed of the condition of tuberculosis within the span of about 2 years. Now, she did some serious praying. And now her husband, Charles, who was a very curious and intelligent man, very intellectual, very scientific, very philosophical, he couldn't help but notice what had happened to his wife. She was supposed to have been dead by now, but she indeed was not. She was very much alive and, in fact, healthy and thriving. So he decided there must be something to this prayer thing that she's been doing. And being very scientific, he decided to join her in the process of sort of a science project. Because he had his own things going on. One leg was shorter than the other from a childhood skating accident when he was 10 years old. And then he experienced healings from this science experiment in his body, in his affairs all around him. And then friends and neighbors took notice. And they wanted some of this. And word spread, and a prayer group was formed, which eventually became known now as what we call Sun Unity, the oldest telephone prayer ministry in existence. And that's the nutshell Cliff's Notes version of how Unity all began. Unity began through prayer, affirmative prayer, and the denial that anything other than God has any power over us. We did a denial in the bulletin today before the affirmation. We denied that anything other than God has any power over us. And then we affirm the truth. So, cancer I knew had no power over me. If there is only one power and one presence in my life and in the universe, then there can't be another. No matter what is going on around us, no matter what the news says, if there is one power and one presence in the universe, there can't be another. Oh, there is free will and behavior, but there can't be another power. And I knew, during my experience this year, I knew this stuff, I believe this stuff. I know that I have the power within me to be healed, as we all do. So, as I had this realization, lying around healing, a little help from Percocet, and as I learned this again for the umpteenth time, I knew that this was one of the many times in life I had my experience of coming to myself. Because when you're recovering from something like that, you got plenty of downtime. And I really had time to really work this stuff. And it was my coming home to myself. You see, every time Myrtle came to a realization through her diligent and committed prayer work, she was coming home to herself, self. With a capital S, her higher self. She literally loved herself into wellness. And this began a movement that she had no idea would exist over 125 years later that has changed countless lives over all of these years around the planet. So I have an assignment for you all this week. I don't know yet how I'm going to follow through and check up on you. I don't plan to do it in creepy ways, but I can be creative. But I really want you guys to do this. This is something that I used to do from time to time, and it's really cool, and it's really simple. I want you to send yourself a card in the mail. Lewis talked earlier about cards. Now there's every occasion. There's Aunt's Day, Uncle's Day, Grandparents' Day. How about your day? Declare your day and send yourself a card. I mean, not an email. That's just weird. And this is not. So, I mean, a good old fashioned, go get the card, address it, stamp it, put it in the snail mail. Do you remember how to do that? And I want you to send yourself what you really need. What do you need right now? What do you want? A card of encouragement? A card of love? A card of compassion? Condolence? We're all going through our stuff. Let your gut be your guide. But just do it. You can buy the card. You can make the card. You can go digging through an old drawer at home and find the card. But just do it. Write it, mail it, and then forget about it. It's so cool when it gets there. And another thing you can do, if you have, speaking of friendships, if you have a friend that you really trust, a friend that's reliable, we know our friends, and they know us, and they love us anyway. I want you to think about that option also, to give it to a friend to mail for you sometime this week. And then it's an even bigger surprise when you get it in the mail. You know, I so often think, I'm thinking about the wasteful extravagance of the definition of prodigal, and I so often think of our friend Bishop John Shelby Spahn and how he has reminded us so many times over the years to love wastefully. Love wastefully. Don't you love that? Love wastefully. And it begins with loving ourselves. It has to begin with loving ourselves. Doing esteemable things builds self-esteem. Doing loving things builds self-love. And every time you express that self-love and you exercise that muscle, that's when you're coming home. And every time you come home, what you're really doing is expressing your desire to put God before everything else. And it's amazing what happens when we do that. Whatever you need to call God, spirit, higher power, but this stuff works. Does it work, PP? PP, my prayer partner. Yeah, we know it works. There's a friend of mine who has a favorite affirmation that she carries with her. And it goes like this: God will give me all I want when all I want is God. God will give me all I want when all I want is God. And you are here expressing as God, as you. You're here as God, expressing as you. It's Friendship Sunday. And even though, in reality, you already have everything you need, we need each other. We need each other, don't we? Even though you have everything you need, because you are all that you need, come home to yourself. Send yourself that card. It's just a little reminder that you're willing to come home to yourself. Just for the rest of you, think about it. You can come home to yourself any time you ever choose. And today on Friendship Sunday, as you make the choice to come home to yourself, I once again say, welcome home.
Thank you, Britt. Thank you so much. Now it's time for our meditation. And I know I am so inspired feeling. So I ask you to join me. The words to our meditation song you'll find in the left flap. I am so blessed for all that I have, all that I am, and all that God is. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that I have. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. All that God is a little song. I am so blessed. am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that God is. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. Your attention on the breath for just a few moments. Take a couple of deep cleansing breaths and feel the fullness of this moment. And allow yourself the time to reflect and really rest on the thoughts that were shared. Remember our oneness with spirit. Breathe deeply and release. Truly, God is with you, as you, and for you. I can relax now because God not only is giving me guidance, it's giving you guidance, expressing the love that we are. Now I ask you to think of yourself as your own best friend, the one you can rely on to help you. Make you happy, know what is best for you, who loves you. Feel yourself embraced by that friendship. Then think of yourself as the best friend of the person sitting right next to you in this room. Fill him or her with your helpfulness, your care, concern. Fill him or her with the sincerity of your friendship and embrace them. Let all your friends come before you in your mind's eye and be their best friend. Fill them with your love, sincerity, and gratitude for their presence in your life. Embrace them with your love, your care, and your concern for them. Let all the people who are part of your daily life come and join us right now. People at work, neighbors, relatives, even the postman. And fill them from head to toe with friendship and surround and embrace them with love. I ask you to think of the one person who you may not like very much, having difficulties with or towards whom you feel is totally indifferent. Be a best friend for that person also, taking him or her into your heart, making no separation. Fill him or her with your friendship and surround them with love. As I turn within, I'm going to call forward wisdom and understanding. God within me is wise and guides me to right and perfect action. He can see what is mine to do. I easily discern my next steps to take. My way is made clear as I ask and go into the silence. Opening in your heart as wide as you can. Let friendship and love flow out. to the people near and far. First to the people that are sitting next to you, then to the people in the houses that surround us, the people in our whole town. Just let it flow. And let the wind of your breath carry that friendship and love. My life is good, and my prayers are always filled with gratitude. I am grateful for all that shows up in my life as healthy relationships, perfect employment, and perfect health. I am patient, knowing that my highest good is unfolding as I keep my mind on God. Now I ask you to put your attention back on yourself and recognize the beauty and the harmony and love that fills this space right now. It's filled with friendship, but not only the person next to you, but for yourself. Embrace yourself with that feeling of love that permeates through this room. Feeling clear and protected and at ease. May all beings be friend to one another. This is our prayer. We know this and affirm it, that we are one and we are all friends, brothers and sisters, with and to each other. And so it is.